Angie has made it easier than ever to hire high-quality pros to get all your home service jobs done well. Just bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie will connect you with local pros who match your specific needs. Or book a service instantly at an upfront price. So join the millions of homeowners who use Angie to care for their homes and get your next home service job done well. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com. Angie has made it easier than ever to hire high-quality pros to get all your home service jobs done well. Just bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie will connect you with local pros who match your specific needs. Or book a service instantly at an upfront price. So join the millions of homeowners who use Angie to care for their homes and get your next home service job done well. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
How can a theme song be that simple yet that catchy? Maybe that is why it's catchy, because it is so simple, and it welcomes us weekly to the steam room. Ernie Johnson, Charles Barkley. Chuck, how's your week?
I think it's getting better. You know, I'm a positive person, but I got a great first of all today.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, it's really important.
Well, I'm not going to stand in the way, because this is the way we begin every show in the first segment of the world's second most popular podcast in the history of media. So here it is. First of all, what you got?
I want everybody to just shut the hell up for 10 seconds. I want to do that, man. There's a lot of yelling and screaming. Man, just let's listen to everybody. Let's have a little respect for each other, some understanding. All of a sudden, everybody want to yell. Everybody want to scream and get their point across. Nobody want to listen. Just shut the hell up, everybody, and says, hey, whether you white, black, rich, poor, Democrat, Republican, Jewish, Hispanic, woman, man, child, just ask somebody, hey, is there something that you want to tell me? Just have some respect for another person during this difficult time. You know, there might be somebody out there who lost their job because of this pandemic. There might be somebody out there who lost a relative to police brutality. There might be another person out there just got some stuff going on mentally, who lost a relative because of the COVID virus. But we're so busy yelling and screaming. And, you know, Dr. Phil has a great, great phrase that I love to use. He calls it being a right fighter. I asked him about that one time. He says, some people, they just want to be right. They're going to just keep screaming. They're not going to listen to you. He calls them right fighters. And this is the perfect time not to be a right fighter. This is the perfect time to just, like, hey, you know what? Let me hear your point of view. And my girl, Judge Judy, said this. Are you hearing me or you're listening to me? But those are two different things. She says, you hear me, but you're not listening. And I just want to challenge everybody out there, man. Just take some time to talk to somebody and just listen to them. That's my first of all.
Chuckster, you know what? That 10 seconds felt pretty darn good, man. Everybody just take a deep breath. Everybody just sit back for a second. Don't anybody talk. These are times where being a good listener is what's required, because everybody's got an opinion. I think it's more important often that we listen to somebody else's than that we are in a hurry to get ours out there.
Yeah.
And then it gets kind of lost in that sea of voices. But I like that, man. I like that approach. That's pretty solid right there from you, Chuckster.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
We got a good show today, too. We got a couple of guests who are going to be coming by. Chris Haynes from Yahoo covers the NBA. He's going to be along. And from CNN, Don Lemon will be joining us next to talk about what these days are like for a guy who comes into your homes every night on CNN. And we'll all try to make sense of it. Don Lemon on the Steam Room next. We welcome you back inside the Steam Room. And as we like to tell all of our guests, please keep the towel on. And look at the towel worn by our next guest. Nice CNN logo. Looks like like the image of Ted Turner on there. But from CNN, Don Lemon joins us in the Steam Room.
A very special guest.
It's a short towel. It's one of those little mini ones.
Hey, it is great to have you with us. And man, I don't even know how you would best sum up your job over the last, I would say the last 2 weeks, but I mean, from the pandemic through the protests in the streets. I mean, what is it like to be on the air on CNN at a time like this?
Well, it's challenging, yet it's empowering at the same time. I sort of have a bit of Charles Barkley in my DNA, in that I always look for the bright side of how we can, what's going to come out of this. And I'm very conscious of what's going on and how dire it is, but I also keep thinking, that's got to be better. Things have to get better. What's going to come out of this? So,
Don, how many years you been in the news?
I've been doing the news since 1990. I've been in the news business since 91, I think. 1991, I think.
You worked in Birmingham for a while, right?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. But to get back to you, it's tough right now. I'm exhausted. I was exhausted from the pandemic, because we had been on air. I mean, I've worked 7 days a week since March, I think. And then this thing happened. And so I started working 7 days a week, but then I have to work in the afternoon sometimes and fill in for breaking news. And then this is just emotional to see anybody dying. I mean, we actually saw two people die on camera. You know, we saw Ahmaud Arbery get shot, died on camera. And then we see George Floyd die on camera with someone with their knee on the neck. And then I have to talk about it all day, every day. And most people don't have to do that. You can just flip the TV off when you're ready, right? Put your phone down when you don't want to read anymore. And I can't do that. So, I mean, honestly, it's been tough. And I hope my colleagues are doing what I do and talking to their therapist as much as they can during the week.
Hey, you know, I told Ernie last week, I said, and you're a black man just like me. I said, man, it is stressful being a black man, especially when you're on television in any shape, because, and you just alluded to it, like the young man Aubrey killed in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. The crazy white lady in New York. And now you got Mr. Floyd. Like, it's exhausting having to talk about, defend, make people listen. Do you feel that pressure like I do?
I do feel the pressure because, you know, we always feel like we have to represent the race, right? And I don't know if that's fair or not, but it is what it is. And we feel that pressure. So, yeah, I do. But it's also very personal because you see yourself in those people. You know, and Ahmaud Arbery, we live in this HGTV society now, right? That's what I love to do. Wherever I move, whatever city, when I was in Atlanta, redo my house, right? You want to make it your own. And it's in a way, it's kind of an escape because, you know, from the realities of your job. So I go on properties all the time. My fiance's in real estate. We go on property and look at, you know, if there's a for sale sign or for property company, we go look. So I can relate to that. I can relate to being a jogger. I can relate to being in the park, Christian Cooper, you mentioned, and, you know, people thinking that they can say whatever they want to you. And then, of course, I can relate to being pulled over by the police and interactions that I've had with the police. And then, you know, until recently when I became somebody, right, they treat you a certain way. And even until they realize it, like they don't realize it and they see the license and they go, oh, you're the guy on CNN. So, and then to have the funerals play out. My sister died recently, and you know, Charles, thank you, because you always, every time something happens, you always reach out. And I had to give part of the eulogy. And so I can relate to that. I can't imagine having to go through these things publicly in front of the whole world. So yes, I relate as a human being more than anything, but as a Black man, I see portions of myself and my family in it. And then I'm there reporting it. It's unbelievable. Can I tell you one story? I was the night I was broadcasting from my home studio. The night everything was on fire, right? I think this was a bunker night. The White House was going, you know, they were starting trash can fires and trying to get and fight. And then on the West Coast, there was a fire and riots and whatever. And I'm sitting in my home studio by myself. And I'm like, it was almost as if it was some weird Twilight Zone kind of thing where it was me against the world. I'm like, is anybody watching? Is anybody out there watching? Our country is on fire. It's in chaos. Help. And it was almost as if I was like in a Twilight Zone movie that I was reporting on, like the end of the world. It's just crazy. It's crazy. That's all I can tell you.
Don, when you were in school, so you started LSU, correct?
I did.
You were, and I don't know if how much broadcasting studies you did there, or if that was more at Brooklyn College. But
no, I did it there. My journalism teacher told me at LSU that I would never make it as a journalist.
Yeah, well, take that. You know what? Because I was at the University of Georgia, and that was before, you know, that was in the 70s. You know, I graduated in 78. But I think, you know, I remember being at J school, and you're taught news guy, got to play right down the middle. You're objective. Mm-hmm. You don't even stress a number because it's going to sound like you're surprised that it's this many, or that you can't, you know, you cannot emote, and you cannot take a side, and it's all going to be right down the middle. But it's just change, man. I mean, I assume you heard those same kind of things when you were in J school.
Of course, you have to be. You got to be objective. So, what's your question about how it's changed?
How it's changed, and the fact that, I mean, you're on a. You know, when I look at you, and I look at Fox, and I it's opinion. Nobody's trying to hide their opinion.
Well, here's the thing. I prefer what I do to, you know, for how I lean in as a point of view and not an opinion, because I always get facts. My thing is always based in facts. It's not based in conspiracy theory. And I don't make up things about people. And I give you, this is my point of view, is my point of view. We all come with a point of view. But just to be honest with you, it's not 1978 anymore. It's not even 2000. No, right. Seriously, it's not even 2008. It's not even 2018. I mean, things are different now. It used to be that the anchorman was sort of this character that you could just cast whatever opinion that you thought that they might be like on, right? They were just sort of a whiteboard that you could just make it whatever. It's just this guy who sat there. Well, in the advent of social media and 24-hour media, that's not how it is anymore. And also within journalism, there are different roles. If I had Lester Holt's job, I would be a much more straightforward news guy, because I'm sitting there every night, you know, good evening, welcome to Nightly News, blah, 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 blah. Here's a story. This reporter's here. Boom. Come back. Right. Thank you, Rob. And then you go to the next story. That's not my role. My role is to sit there for however many hours I'm on and have a conversation with the viewer and inform them. So I have to fill time almost as if I'm a radio show, or like you guys do when you're doing your sports show, or you're doing a play-by-play. My role is different. And I can lean in and give a point of view. But you also have to remember, Ernie, the times that we're in right now when journalism is under attack. We're not dealing with a normal situation right now. We're dealing with people who attack journalists, they attack reality, they attack truth. And many times when you are giving the truth and telling the truth about someone, it may look like you are either giving your opinion or partisan, because the truth isn't on that side. So if I say the person lied, they're going to say, oh, you're just a big liberal. And I'll go, no. What you actually did was what you said was a lie. Oh, you're just a conservative. No, what you actually said was a lie, and you're deflecting. So I'm not giving an opinion, I'm giving facts many times, but the people out there who are steeped in ideology or they have some sort of reason to discount what I'm saying will say that I'm partisan or giving an opinion because they don't like the fact that I'm spitting at them.
You know, you look at our president and when the rioting and loot, the rioting and looting is going on, I mean, and peaceful protests, he's talking about is skinheads in the mix, Antifa's in the mix. Number one, how do you prove that? But how do you as a journalist, I mean, how do you answer that question?
What, about who's in there and who's, listen, when it's going on in the moment, I don't know. I'm sitting in the moment, just like you, when I'm live, if you're talking about when I'm live. And I have to rely on producers to give me information. But in the aftermath of that, when you've had time to do some research, then just like anything else, you do your research. There is very little evidence, if none, there may be no evidence that there is Antifa or anybody in those crowds or skinheads. There's more evidence that there were right-wing extremists in the crowd because they've been arrested. And that's not to say that other people aren't in the crowd, but at this juncture, no one else has been arrested. No one else has been charged. So the only people who've been charged is this right-wing group who started causing chaos. We can see that there are anarchists out there. I think that's definitely true. There are people there just to start trouble. And who knows what they're from. But as far as Antifa, and the moment you try to describe Antifa, people say, oh, you're defending Antifa. It's not it. It is this disparate group that doesn't really have a leader. And so it's easy to cast, easy to say Antifa. Like it's easy to say unmasking, or it's easy to say the new Black Panthers. It's easy to say Acorn because it sounds scary, right? It sounds spooky or ominous. But we don't really know if Antifa's in the crowd. People don't really know where the Antifa is. And I don't think Antifa even knows what Antifa is. And I think it's fair to say that there are anarchists, left-wing anarchists, right-wing anarchists, all kinds of anarchists out there. But to put a name on it and say it's definitely this one group, I don't think we have the evidence yet. It could be, but at this juncture, we do not have that evidence, and it doesn't show that. That's just a sort of a boogeyman that the president and conservative media make up because they need that for the audience and they need that for their supporters.
You know, Don, when you talk about how relentless this job has been recently for you, that really rang home to me because I know my wife and I, there are times when we say, turn it off. I just can't take any more right now. Yep. You know, I just can't, you know, because we are trying to stay up to the minute. We've watched you guys and Chris and everybody nonstop. And then it's, I can't take any more. And so I can imagine you having to say, you don't have that option of saying, I can't take any more. But is there, with all the hours that you've been putting in, what have you seen that's given you hope?
I see people like you and Charles. I see people like me and Chris Cuomo, who don't look like each other, who come from very different backgrounds, may not have even hung out when we were kids, who knows? Actually having real conversations and leaning on our friendship, leaning into our friendship because we know the importance of this moment and what it means right now. I see young people out there of all different ethnicities. And they are pulling us into the future that they want, into the present that they want for this country and into the future. They don't want people dying at the hands of police. They don't want racism. They're sick of it. And in many ways, let's be honest, they don't want a lot of what we created. And maybe the times were changed, the times were different, or I'm not sure. But I think those young people think like, hey, you guys have been kind of going with the status quo and just inching along and trying to make things better, but you haven't really for everyone. And this is 2020 and it's time. We don't want the racism. We don't want the police brutality. We want criminal justice reform. They're sick of the ideology, the far left and the far right. They're over it. They want a better world, and they're out there screaming. They told you peacefully. Mm-hmm. Some even tried to take a knee. Nobody listened, and now they're saying, okay, you got to hear us. So that actually makes me optimistic that those people, those young people are leaders. I may not agree 100% with the way they do it, but their passion and that they're actually out there and they want to change, I can only respect that. I'm not talking about the looters and the rioters. That's a whole different thing. I'm talking about the kids who want what's right.
You know, in your business right now, the President of the United States says something or does something every single day that y'all have to talk about. How frustrating is that? Because I know we all live in the moment, but I can't remember going back to Clinton, Bush's,
Reagan,
President Obama, all of them. I don't remember them having to say or do something every single day where you don't get a day off. You have to talk about it every single day. It's crazy.
It's crazy. And, you know, Ernie, you said, I watched you doing, you know, we're talking about me during COVID and, you know, the pandemic. But my schedule has been this way, and it just keeps getting crazier. I'm ripping off of what Charles said. Since this guy came down the escalator, I was supposed to do 1 hour at night at 10 o'clock, four nights a week, Monday through Thursday. And then on Friday, some sort of CNN documentary, Anthony Bourdain, something was going to run in that spot. Trump came down that escalator. My show became five nights a week. And then he started with the I prefer heroes who aren't captured, and then just kept going on and on and on and on and on. And then my show became 2 hours, five nights a week, sometimes six or seven, since 2015. And I mean, that's a lot to take in live information. And then sometimes I'm on air longer than that because news will break. Like he will say, you can grab them by the pee. When they're star, they'll make you. I was on the air till 2 or 3 in the morning that night. And there have been other nights like that. This is, so fast forward to now, Charles. Now you have COVID and all of this other police stuff on top of that. And whatever breaking news, whatever news might break. It is exhausting. And Ernie, the American people are exhausted. Every day the president does something or says something crazy. And sometimes things that the president will say, he'll attack me or attack someone and just say, and we don't even pay attention anymore because it's just crazy. If the president, if Barack Obama had said something about me or tweeted or said something in a press conference, everyone would be like, wait, what? The president said something? Oh my God, I can't believe the president criticized you. It'd be a big news story. Now the president tweets about you and I don't even read it. I just go, oh, someone will say, the president tweeted about you. And I go, oh yeah, well, so today is Thursday. So what's the big deal? Because he in many ways, he's worn us out and worn us down, except for he hasn't worn us down to not tell the truth and to fact check him. But Ernie, aren't you exhausted?
Yep.
Charles, aren't you exhausted?
Yes.
It's information overload. It's you used to be able to be informed without being inundated. I don't know if that's possible anymore because there's so much going on.
No, it's true. There are a lot of voices, and there's, and it's like this topic is going to be discussed all day, and you hear from countless voices on it. And then it's, and again, from your perspective, it's like you can be sitting there right now having no idea what your lead story is going to be tonight. Whereas in years past, you might say, well, I have a pretty good idea that we're going to lead with this. Now it's like, shoot, let me know at 9:58. You know what we're gonna lead with,
and that's happened.
Yeah,
I'll be walking to the studio, and my producer, I'm like, why are you calling me? I'm like, I'm the studio. I just saw you 30 seconds ago, and then she goes, the president just tweeted he's sending troops to blah blah blah. I'm just making something up, and you're like, oh God,
right?
Or I'll be in the open of the show, and we used to run, you know, there used to be like an animation like And in the animation, she'll say, stop. And I'll go, uh-oh. And she'll say, blank the prompter. And then I'm just talking. And then, you know, you guys wear your pieces. And they'll say, breaking news. And I'll say, breaking news. And she'll say, the president just, blah. And I'll say, the president. And I repeat what she said. And then she goes, now go with prompter. I mean, that happens all the time.
Right.
So it's, but that's where we are. It used to be, you know, you can figure out your show. This is the lead show at this time. We're going to have this guest. We're going to have this guest. Now we have to make sure that we have guests who can speak on just about anything in case there's breaking news.
Have you had a chance to talk to Robin DiAngelo?
I don't think I have. Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Because I'm reading that right now because her book, White Fragility, came out in 18. My wife is an avid reader, and she's the one who said, you got to read this. I'm early on in it, and it is pretty fascinating. And it is, and if you, Chuckster, I don't know if you've heard about this book, and because she's been interviewed a lot recently, but just talking about why are white people so afraid to talk about racism?
Well, why, Ernie?
I don't. Yeah, because it makes you. I don't know. It's like, well, I'm not, and you say, well, I'm not a racist, so I can. And that's part of the thinking that's so flawed, is that, well, I haven't done anything outwardly that's, or compared to this person, you know, it makes you defensive. I love the fact that she wrote that book because, you know what, you're right. It does. You know, if she says all white Americans are racist, oh, well, maybe they are, but not me. You get this defensive posture. And that's why I'm loving reading the book, because I'm not afraid to read it. I want to learn about this. I want to know why something that I may consider to be innocent maybe is offensive to somebody else, or maybe just contributes to the problem.
Well, I think it's a couple of things personally. I think number one, it's painful for white people to talk about slavery. We treated people like that. I think that's a tough conversation. Every now and then when you're in school, they say, well, that was slavery. And then, hey, they go to the next subject. Like, no, slavery was a big deal. And I think it's hard for white America to talk about slavery. Let's get to the 60s. Like, wait, we don't even want to use the bathroom with you. Then we got segregated schools. Like, all these white people, they had nothing to do with it. They might have benefited from it.
Might have.
But they had nothing to do with it, but they have to acknowledge slavery happened. They have to acknowledge the 60s. And I think it's a lot for them to handle, because even if they aren't racist, they have to first admit they benefited from the system. But that's hard to talk about, saying, man, we treated y'all like crap and we're behind in every phase of life. And it's a tough conversation. I'm not saying who's right or who's wrong. I don't judge other people. But, like, I'm going to say, like, listen, that's a hard conversation for white people to have.
Yeah, and Don, I know you're on a tight schedule. I know you only got a couple of minutes. Let's give you the last word on this, please. And again, thank you so much for hanging with us for this afternoon, man. We appreciate you.
Let me just say this. I asked you why you think, why is it so hard? Obviously, because you're white. And I think there's a lot of white guilt going around right now. And I think it's because no one wants to be called a racist, right? It's hard to admit that you have a racial blind spot. But my answer are that you have any sort of bias in you, whether it's, you know, unconscious or whatever. My response to that is, how could you not be racist growing up in America, right? Considering where we've come from, how could you not be racist? We all are. And let me explain that, because every year, I don't know if you guys garden, my hydrangeas come back, they'll be a different color, right? The tulips, the orchid. And you know why they're a different color? It's because of what you put in the soil. Because of what the concentration of the soil, it has nothing to do with the plant. The plant's the same thing. We're all the same thing. But it depends on where you were raised and how you were brought up. So if you were brought up in America in a system where the default is whiteness, which is inherently biased. So the culture is centered around you. that's the normal. The factory reset is for normal in America is whiteness. And so how could you not be racist considering the way that you grew up and our history, and that you don't learn about Black history and true history in schools when we grow up? So I think we should stop being so defensive and saying we're not racist and say we are. And what do we do about it? And how do we fix that? In some way, maybe take the stigma off the term so that we can actually deal with the problem. Because we all have some degree of bias in us, right? And if you're a white person and you're in America and have been the preeminent voice, and you see all of a sudden change starts to happen, that little rumble underneath your feet can feel like discrimination or an earthquake when it's actually balancing out and it's just leveling the playing field. So I understand why, like Charles, when you said, I understand why some people are scared, nervous. If I was an older white person and I saw all of this stuff, and I'd be like, wow, the world has certainly changed around me. Oh my gosh, look how much the world is changing. I fear, fear, fear. And then someone comes along and they play on that fear. Look, those people are taking your stuff. It's all free. And we're going to take our country back. That works. Because what do you want things to be the way they were? Things are never going to be the way they were. Ever. The world is good. Those young people that are out there on the street, they're fighting to change the world. It is not going back to where it was. It is, coal is never coming back. People are making, and not unless you're making a cell phone. So people have to change. And that's the whole point of our country, is not to stay stagnant. It's not to be Leave It to Beaver. The people who wrote our Constitution were very smart. A more perfect union. That's not a perfect, you can never reach perfect, but more perfect, which means you keep striving in this American experiment. And that means that you keep bringing other people in. So the more people who keep coming into this country, and the more we evolve, it's never going to be the way it was. And so people just need to get used to that. Otherwise, you're going to get left behind.
Well said.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Well said, my brother. Way to finish us off.
Yeah.
Thanks for taking the time.
I love your relationship. I love your friendship. You are an example of what people should be doing. You guys have great conversations. You fight like family, because family really fights. They insult each other. You ever been to a family thing and all of a sudden you're like, how did this fight break out? And then 20 minutes later, you're having a drink and you're like, oh shit, you used to do that in high school.
That's right.
That's how real people who love each other have conversations. I love that you do that. Chris and I do that. And that's what America should be doing.
Don, here's to putting something in the soil that grows a nation that we all want. Okay. Yeah. And I appreciate you. Appreciate your perspective. And we'll be watching, man. Thank you, Don.
Take care, man.
Thank you guys so much. Take care. Be in touch. Ernie, come on the show, and I'm going to come on you guys' show.
All right, anytime.
I got you. Hey, we'd love to have you, man.
Thank you.
Back here on the Steam Room, the second most popular podcast in the history of media. And again, we encourage all of our guests to keep their towels on as they enter the steam room. And look who's coming to the steam room now, Chuckster. It's Chris Haynes.
Special guest, Mr. Haynes.
He's from Yahoo, and he's also from Tuesday TNT nights working the sidelines. Chris, good to see you, man. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It's a little hot now that I stepped in the steam room. You know, perspiring around here a little bit, but I'm doing good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
We're going to talk a little NBA with you to start off with, at least. So, I was talking to Mello yesterday on this NBA Together series that we do, and had a great talk with him. And when we talked about hoop, he said physically he's ready to go, can't wait to play. But then he was like, "But I'm still kind of up in the air about the whole Orlando thing. How widespread is the like concern on the players' part at this point about going down to Orlando to resume?"
There's concerns in a lot of different degrees, at a lot of different levels. The vote was made in by the Player Association, I believe it was last week, that they agreed with the owner's format, 22-team format, to go out there and restart the season. But, you know, there's some players out there who felt like everybody should have been able to vote. And I think there's a little bit of a disconnect there with just how the system is run there with the players and the Player Association, because that's the – player reps' job. There's 30 player reps. It's their job to gather the intel from their teams, and then from that standpoint, gauge the feeling, and then take it back to the committee, and then that's the way it's handled. And I think a lot of players, I know a lot of players out there, they felt like, dang, okay, so they just voted just to send us out back out there. Why wasn't every player afforded the right to vote on whether the season should restart or not? And so, yeah, there's definitely concern out there with players, trying to decide on if they're going to go. I don't know. I think this might be the time where we may see some injuries popping up. In the next couple of weeks, some season-ending injuries just start popping up in the next couple of weeks because, they're a little bit hesitant or fearful of going over to the Orlando bubble. So there's cause for concern. I expect that we'll hear more from players on this side, the coming weeks.
Adam didn't answer my question good the other night because, when we had him, because we ran out of time because he said if a player tests positive, they're going to take him out of competition. And then we had to go. I'm saying, no, because you got to take the whole team out, don't you? And you got to take the team they were playing against. I would like to hear the NBA say more about that. Because I had about 15 people call me after the show. They're like, yo, man, Adam didn't give you no good answer. He said, if a guy tests positive, we're going to take him out. And I'm like, whoa. And TNT, which pissed me off, y'all rushed us off the air so we could go watch Jack Reacher for the 175th time. I really would like them to tell me how they're going to do that.
I don't see, but here's the thing, and Chris, you can weigh in too, but maybe I don't know that they know. I mean, I think that there's still research in that, and they're probably still talking to medical experts. And I think that's probably why you didn't get a full answer on that.
Ernie, and that's one of the reasons about, we go back to your original question with Carmelo.
Right, that they're up in the air.
Yeah, I think every player is going to, like you said, they don't know the answer. But I think some of these players, especially teams that know they can't win it.
Yeah.
Teams that, like I know, we know the Lakers and the Clippers and the Bucks, like they're the three clear-cut favorites. But if you're one of these other teams and you're like, hey, you know what? They ain't gave me the answer I want to hear. I'm not playing.
And the other thing we heard too, Chris, is, hey, do you want to be the one telling Greg Popovich, because of your age, you can't coach this game from the bench. You're going to have to be over here. You want to tell Pop?
Yeah, I'll leave that to Adam Silver. I'll say this, Ernie, to your point, about like, does the NBA even know? Do they have a protocol in place yet? And you saying the case may be that they just don't know. They don't have the answers. Well, if that's the case, we don't know if that is. But if it is the case, then was it too soon to say we were starting the season? Like, shouldn't we have all of that information out there? Shouldn't we know the steps, the protocol, before we say we're going to play? I don't know if they do know the protocol or not. But I will say, to Chuck's point about players, who do test positive over the course of time. What if that player is LeBron James, is Giannis Antetokounmpo? Are we really just going to send them away and quarantine them and keep play going on? That's going to ruin the season for a lot of these teams if one of their key guys goes out. And I'll say then my last point to your original question, Ernie, about just our players ready. There are a lot of high-profile players that I know who took it easy during this pandemic because they didn't believe the season was going to come back. And so now they've kind of been amping up their training. But, maybe Chuck can answer this. I don't know how much training they really need to get back to the level that they need to play at come the end of July. So, this has just caught a lot of people off guard and still continues to do so.
I think they're going to have plenty of time, but hey, man, I'm telling you, this thing is scary. And you see, that was the one thing. You see that the cases are spiking again around the country.
Florida too, Chuck.
Yeah, and what scares me also, Ernie, with all these protests, and I didn't even think about this, I saw a doctor on CNN said he's expecting a huge spike because, number one, none of these protesters were practicing social distance. But he said the biggest problem he had when they were putting tear gas on these guys, everybody took their mask off and was breathing and coughing on each other. I never even thought about that. He says he looked at in several cities, when they were shooting tear gas at these protesters, everybody was standing together coughing. I mean, so I'm like, I never even thought about that. So I expect this thing to spike some more.
Shifting away from the NBA for a second, Chris, as the father of four daughters, and God bless you for that, because, and look, I've got some daughters too, and I know that from different ages, you know, they can be really adorable at that age, or they can, it can be your best friend, or you can be like the guy who doesn't understand anything. And so I know the road you're traveling, but with the road the nation is traveling right now, what kind of conversations have you had with them?
It's been an experience that, you know, I didn't think will come to fruition in this capacity. You know, they're asking a lot of questions. And I think why this, as it pertains to the George Floyd tragedy, I think why there's a lot of uproar from not just people of color, not just Black people, but all walks of life, because of this pandemic we're in. You know, people are losing their jobs. People are dying. People are stuck in their homes. And so there's frustration. And then they're forced to see this incident because we're at home. We don't have anything to do. And so, you know, just explaining the dynamic to them. I have my oldest daughter, then my 16-year-old daughter. She's the little, I want to call her, she's the little Harriet Tubman of the family. Like, we went out and marched where we're at here in the San Jose area of Fremont. We went marched Saturday. And I wasn't going to go. You know, I really hadn't been out the house aside from camping. I wasn't going to go, but my daughter, 6-year-old, she was just adamant that she get out there. And I was like, man, my little baby's going out. I got to go. Like, I got to at least go and, you know, check on her and see how everything is. And what I'm learning, Ernie, and I think this is what happened in the civil rights movement back in the day, is that it's being mostly ran, especially over here, by young folks. You know, I'm talking like 22, 23 and under. And so, you know, just using this as a teaching moment and understanding that, look, there are ways to go about it. They're protesting in March because we're going through, Chuck and Ernie, we going through some marches. And I'm just going to keep it real. And we're going to these protesters, and there's a lot of people of all walks of life in these marches. And the ones that's not Black, I'm noticing in the march that we were at, you know, we're going by marching by police officers, and it's F the police, F the police. We're like, hold on, that, but look, you know, I mean, like, this is a Black Lives Matter peaceful movement, peaceful march. You know, we're not trying to send that message. You know what I mean? Like, this is supposed to be a call for peace and for everybody to come together. And, you know, I'm just trying to explain it and explain to my daughters that we have to understand it's good to go out there and you know, if you want to protest and march, but make sure we do it in a civilized manner. We don't want to let our emotions and anger cloud your judgment in what you do. And so it's tough. I'm learning a lot still as we go on, but you know, in a lot of realms, my daughters are teaching me probably a lot more.
And this comes from a man covering the Blazers years ago, talking to a coworker on the phone at night and not wanting to wake the kids. And then you're getting questioned about what you're doing, what, 15, 20 feet away from your house. And you got cuffed, you got arrested, right?
Yeah.
I read your article and listened to your story about this latest march and saying, this is not about saying F the police. But if there's a guy who would say, I got a case for saying this, you go back to that night when for some reason you got arrested.
Yeah. Well, all right, that, for people that don't know, that was, God, I can't remember what year that was, 2012 or 13. But yeah, I was in front. I had just moved into this house in the Portland area. I was there for probably about a week. And across the street from my house is the railroad track. And it was approaching free agency. And so it was getting close to July 1. And when I talk on the phone, I pace a lot. And so you guys know when July 1 comes, you know, it's midnight. Well, on the West Coast, midnight time is like, you know, we're getting started. So I'm talking. I can't remember who I was talking to. You know, talking to a bunch of sources and getting ready for free agency. And I decided to go outside. It's around 10 o'clock. Go outside to the I'll go up by the train track. And I'm in the gravel area. You know, there's a gravel area that separates the road from the actual where the railroad's at. So I'm in that area just pacing back and forth. And So I look, when I'm not dressed in a suit for work, I wear a tank top, some shorts, I dress casual like, anybody else. So I'm on the phone and I see a cop kind of slow down. He's on the opposite side of the street. It's a one-way street. And he kind of slows down to like see who I am. And then he just takes off and speeds up. And so then I'm talking to my producer at the time, Peter Sokoch. So I'm telling him about the stories I'm working. And so I told him, I said, hey, man, I think this cop's going to come and kind of question me because he just sped up and he busted a U-turn. So sure enough, the cop comes over, flashes the high beams on me and just automatically just questions, why am I here? You're in a private property. I'm like, okay, well, my house is right here. So I just go across the street back home. He was like, nah, let me see your ID. And so I'm like, for what, officer? What for? He's like, you're in a private property. Then 10 seconds later, two other cars show up, cop cars showed up. And it kind of escalated from that point. And I was like, is this necessary? So he sits me on the curb, just ask me, question me, what am I doing here? What am I drinking? I'm like, what are you talking about? And I got to the point, I said, man, y'all, this is ridiculous, whatever. At that point, he handcuffs me, my phone drops. So I yell to my producer when the phone dropped, hey, call my wife. Come on, because my wife doesn't know what's going on. She's in the house. And they, handcuffed me. And I could tell this officer was trying to really agitate me, to provoke me to do something, because I'm not the most limber person. And so when he was trying to cuff me, he was like, stop resisting. And I'm like, officer, do your job. I'm not resisting. Do your job. And so he gets in, he puts me in the car and he looks at my ID, like, what do you do for a living? First time he asked me, I'm like, I'm a sports reporter. He's a sports reporter. So I'm in handcuffed in the back of the car and I see he goes on his phone. He's sitting in the front seat. He goes on his phone, still in the front of my house. Wife still doesn't know what's going on. He goes and checks on my phone, Googles my name. He looks, and I guess he saw who I was, saw different pictures and videos. He turns the music up in the car, turns it blasted loud. Then he steps out the vehicle. And I could tell he went to call somebody and say, hey, I picked up such and such. This is who he is. But at that time, it was too late for him to release me. He knew he did something wrong. At this time, my wife came out saying, what's going on? And then he basically said, your husband's being arrested for trespass. I was in custody for about 6 hours. Got out probably about 3 a.m, took him to court. I got off the judge said the officer was wrong in doing so. And I was racially profiled and all that stuff. And I had no criminal history whatsoever. There was no reason for it to escalate to that point. And Ernie and Chuck, this is my last thing. When I wrote that story, just to shine light on what can happen to people of color in those situations, I did not put the officer's name in there, in that story. And I regret doing that. And, I told my story and I felt like this would be good to shine some light to say this could happen to anybody. But I feel like I let that cop off the hook, man. At some point, I may revisit that. But I don't know what happened to the cop. I don't know if he was reprimanded at all. I don't know if he's still with the force or whatever. But, I left him out. I thought about suing at the time. I didn't sue because I didn't want my career to look bad. Because you're taught as a journalist, stay out of the news. You know, it's not about you. Cover it. And so I didn't want to sue the police department, even though I felt they should have been sued. But, that's my story. And, that was one of my brush-ins.
I appreciate you sharing it, man. I do.
Man, this is such a crazy time in our lives. Obviously, we got the death of Mr. Floyd, and also we got this pandemic. This is the craziest time, and sadness and anger, hopefulness. I got a lot of things going on in my head right now. I thought that until this other stuff happened, I thought the pandemic was the worst thing that happened in my life, because I just feel for the people, because there's people out here who are never going to get their job back. They're going to lose their businesses. They're going to lose their houses. And you got to have empathy and sympathy for people. And that's the one thing that I try to tell people, man, just try to walk in another man's shoes. Just listen. I hate that people, all black people are thugs, all white people are racist. Nah, man, I'm never gonna be in that place where I got a dark soul. I'm gonna judge every person by their own actions. And I hope everybody is capable of doing that at this difficult time, because, man, we need real people to handle real problems. We can't trust the media to tell us how to be left-wing, right-wing, conservative, liberal. We just got to have respect for humanity, man. And Ernie, I'm glad you wore the shirt again.
It's my uniform, Chuckster.
Yeah, be a better human, man.
Well said, Chuckster. And Chris, thanks for hanging with us for a while, man. We appreciate you. And keep being a great dad to those four daughters, man. That's awesome.
Keep it up, Daniel Boone.
Chuck, Ernie, man, it was an honor to be on you guys' pod, man. I wish you guys, nothing but success in this platform, man. Thanks for having me on, guys. Real talk.
Hopefully we bump into you one of these days, man. Thank you, Chris.
No doubt. Y'all take care.
Thank you, Chris.
Appreciate you.
You know, Ernie, he does a fantastic job. A father to take four women camping.
Daniel Boone.
That's a father right there.
Yeah. At those ages, too, man. Oh, goodness.
That's hard work right there.
Welcome back to the Steam Room, kind of to wrap things up. We should point out, however, Charles, for those of you who kind of have your week planned around what TK says, the longtime producer of Inside the NBA, you have your week planned around what he's going to say on the Steam Room. TK not appearing this week, graciously surrendering his time, has such good conversations with Don Lemon and Chris Haynes that, for the sake of time, TK has once again taken one for the team. What a guy. Need those on a team, don't you, Chuckster?
Hey, he's the producer?
Yeah.
Every time I'm just seeing him walking around. I didn't know he had a job.
Take that, TK. Here's a telephone number that you need to commit to memory, folks. 404-987-0330. I wish we had a catchy jingle, but 404-987-0330. That's Chuck's answering machine. If you have that number, you got something to say, you can call it, and we might put you on just like this.
You've reached Charles Barkley. Leave a message, America.
Charles and Ernie, it's Stav from Australia. Just calling because I know you and your Turner team and many people that you care about are doing it tough in America. You guys helped us when we had our bushfires, so tell us how we can help you now that it's the other way around. Every week I have a key message that I give to the sales team I work with, and this week that message was inspired by last week's Steam Room. Charles saying we need to look beyond color and Ernie's sentiment to be a better human. I said to my team that while we need to understand our differences to generate compassion and empathy for one another, we also must understand our similarities and see ourselves as humans first. Sending you guys nothing but love and positivity, your mate down under and loyal steamer, Stav.
That's awesome.
You know, man, it makes you feel good because obviously we're getting beat to death right now with just negativity and anger and frustration and sadness and grief. But man, you've seen a lot of good stuff out here too. I mean, you see all these young black kids and white kids walking together, trying to change the world. No, to piggyback on this point, though, man, just treat people better. Like, yeah, we got different skin colors, but I want the same things. You know, you just want a good family, a good house, a good job, a good neighborhood. Everybody wants the same thing. And you don't have to take mine to get yours or vice versa, but just acknowledge people. I mean, that's all.
See what it is that you can do to try to ensure that other people have that opportunity too. And when you see something wrong, you can't be silent and say, well, it wasn't my fault. You have to say, this is wrong. What can we do about it? And so I think, to have somebody like Stav, who's been calling us on a regular basis and kind of sharing what we talk about here with his co-workers there, it does shrink the world a little bit. That's a good
thing. It does. Thank you, Stav.
You the man, Stav. Thanks. Next.
Yes, sir. Charles Barkley. Mr. Charles Barkley. This is Dex from Texas. And I just want to thank you guys for what you do. Thank you for using your platform for the benefit of others, whether it's on the Inside the NBA show or your podcast. You understand that you have a platform and it's something that should be used not just for yourself and your own brand and blessing, but also for others. So thank you for that example. Keep it up. Charles, this is my question. You are on a great team called the Dream Team. We know y'all could get down on the court, but who can get down on the dance floor? Which member of the Dream Team is the best dancer and who could boogie with the best of them? All right, take care. God bless.
I like a question that starts kind of with a social message and a thank you, and then transitions right into a question for which I cannot wait for the answer. Go ahead, Chuck.
That's one of the best questions I've ever been asked before. I got to tell you, though, Ernie.
It's not you.
I don't know. Definitely not me.
It's not David Robinson.
It's definitely not David Robinson or Magic or Larry Bird. And listen, I honestly don't know if any of those guys can dance. I'm not even going to lie. I really don't know if any of those guys can actually dance. I mean, because you know they're going to do the like this here, that little move your head and shake your body a little bit. Yeah. But I don't think any of the guys, like that was my move right there. Oh, yeah. Go roll with it. But you know, I don't think any of the guys can dance.
Mine's more of the from Hitch. You know, when it's like...
Well, keep it right here. Keep it right here.
This is where you live.
Yeah, that's what,
I don't need any pizza. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I know. So you really don't have an answer. So you can't just narrow that down to one guy.
Normally when guys like myself included, you just post up in a corner somewhere. You don't really dance because it's so much attention on you anyway, especially now with cell phones because – you know, a lot of times when I've been out the last few years, you got people filming you. That's why you have to be really careful when you're in public. So, but when you're out, you don't want to attract a lot of attention. That's just going to be more people going to bug the hell out of you at the club.
Everybody remember the number? 404-987-0330. Chuck's answering machine.
Two great calls, man. Thank you for the call. Two great calls.
To Dex and to Stav, very much appreciated. Chuckster, that's about it. Hey, remember when on these podcasts we would have like discussion on, hey, did you see The Last Dance last night? Doesn't that seem like that was years ago now that we even had those discussions, given what we've had to talk about recently?
It seems like years ago.
Yeah.
You know, golf started today, so that's going to be good news. Like I say, I'm curious and worried about a new round of the virus, but I hope at some point we can start playing sports because, man, people are so tired of seriousness. They need a break.
They need the escape.
Yeah, like you told Don Lemon, and he said it's exhausting. We need a break.
Yep. That is episode number 21 in the books of The Steam Room, and it is a legal podcast now, 21 in. Chuckster, always good hanging with you, man.
All right, my brother. Hey, thanks for everybody who works on the show, and have a great weekend.
Talk to you next week.
Hey, loyal steamers. TK here. I just want to say thanks again to our friend Stav from Australia for calling in. And most importantly, for asking, how can we help? Action can take many forms. If you're interested in donating to an organization committed to effecting change, WarnerMedia supports the following organizations: Color for Change, National Action Network, National Urban League, NAACP Legal Defense Fund, the National Center for Civil and Human Rights, and Equal Justice Initiative. Thank you again for listening to The Steam Room. See you next week.